This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining us today on the Jodcast is Professor Lucio Meyer from the University of Zurich, and he's been giving a talk about the formation of supermassive black holes. So, first of all, what is a supermassive black hole?
Okay, so that's a good question. It's a starting place for our discussion. So, a supermassive black hole is a black hole that has a mass corresponding to millions or even billions of suns. So they're really enormous in mass, but because they're black holes, they're extremely small, you know, the matter is concentrated in a very small region. And they live at the center of galaxies. That's at least what we think. The reason why we think they exist is because we observe emission in a very high energetic component of light, which we call X-rays, which we don't see actually, but they're part of the extension of light at very high energy. And we think that this emission in this energetic photons comes from matter that is accreting onto these black holes. So that's why we postulate that they exist. We don't really see them because they're black holes.
Can you briefly explain what accreting is?
Accreting basically means that you have a black hole, and this is a lot of mass in a small region of space. And because of that, it has a strong gravitational field. So gravity is very strong around the black hole, and this pulls the matter towards it. And essentially what it does, it eats really the matter. And once it goes inside the black hole, it disappears because no light can be seen.
Do these exist in every galaxy or just some galaxies? Or
we still don't know it, actually. We think they exist in every big galaxy, so big like our galaxy or even bigger. And for the smaller galaxies, we don't really know. It's unclear whether they are still existing, even in galaxies that are 10 times smaller than our galaxy.
So how do these black holes come to be at the center of galaxies?
Yeah.
What makes them be found there?
Yeah, this is what we really don't know. So in order to answer this question, you really have to understand how they form, essentially, right? And also you want to understand how they form together with the galaxies, okay? So the idea would be to start from the very beginning of the universe and being able to see both the emergence of galaxies and of these black holes at the same time. Unfortunately, this is not possible with the theory that we can develop today. We can come close to it by using models on big computers, and that's what we do most of the time. Actually, that's what my research is focusing on. And so we start from some assumptions of the state of the universe at the very beginning. And the assumption is that everything is dominated by an unseen component of matter, which we call dark matter. We don't see it, but we know that it exists, because in galaxies we know that there is a lot of mass that we don't see. And then we try to see whether there is a way to take normal matter, which is, you know, the matter from which we are made, atoms and molecules, and push it to a very small radius so that you make a black hole. And you want to put a lot of matter into a very small region because you want to have a big black hole, a supermassive black hole. And so the model that we have developed is based on this idea that at the very beginning of the universe, when you had the first galaxies that were born at the time, which were already similar to our Milky Way, but they were much denser because the universe was much smaller. And so everything was denser at the time. They started colliding because the universe was very dense. So it was easy for each galaxy to encounter another galaxy. And so by colliding, in these collisions, what happens is the matter gets compressed to a very high density. And it typically gets compressed at the center because that's where you have the highest density, even in galaxies today, that's true. And so by compressing this matter at a very high density, we showed in a work that we published last year that you can actually get a cloud of dense matter, which is very close to the state at which you expect the collapse to produce a black hole. We didn't show that yet. That's the future. We have to really show that it collapses into a black hole. But it's really hard to think that it would not do it because there's nothing so dense that we know and has not become a black hole.
So you're using computer simulations to model galaxies at the early stages of the universe when there are lots of galaxies close together. Yeah. And so they collide and they produce these massive clouds, yeah, which condense into a black hole. Now, do they condense into just kind of normal black holes or supermassive black holes?
No, we think they collapse into supermassive black holes because they are huge. You know, these clouds contain typically 10 million or even 100 million times the mass of the sun. And a stellar mass black hole instead is as massive as the sun or slightly more massive than that. So it's a completely different type of object that we expect will be at the end state of the collapse. But the final stage of the collapse is still to be simulated in the future. It's currently at the limits of the capabilities that we have because we need to include corrections due to the theory of general relativity. These are possible to be included. Actually, there are modelers who work on that specific aspect. But what is still missing is a computer code that can actually join what we do on large scales with these relativistic effects on small scales. And that's basically the future development of this particular problem.
Is it the merging of the two galaxies that produce enough matter in the core of these galaxies to aid the collapse? Or is the merging process itself also contributing to possible collapse of the black hole?
Well, it's a bit of both in a sense. So it's because, you know, the galaxies that merged at the time in the early universe, they had a lot of matter at high densities by themselves. But then because they merge, during the merger, what happens is that this matter, we say in our technical jargon, loses angular momentum. What it means is that essentially it starts to sink towards the center because it doesn't have enough rotation to keep it at large distances, right? It's like if you suddenly were changing the state of the solar system, for example, you know, you were, imagine you somehow extract some velocity from the velocity of each planet, you know, extract some portion of it, what will happen is the planet will fall towards the sun. So it's the same effect that we see in galaxy mergers, basically.
When you're actually observing or trying to observe these supermassive black holes, what allows you to identify them as being supermassive rather than stellar mass?
It's because, as I said before, since all black holes, both the small ones, the stellar mass, and these big ones, they are detected indirectly, not because they're seen, of course, but because we see emission in a region of a galaxy in these X-rays, what you can determine is how much of this emission, so essentially how much energy you have that you can measure. And the energy levels of the supermassive black holes are many, many, many times higher than the energy levels of normal mass black hole. The energy level is related to the mass. We know how to link them. And this is really standard physics, if you want. There's nothing very difficult about that. It's been known for 50 years. So we know that if you have a certain energy, that corresponds to a certain mass. And that's how we know that the masses of these big black holes are very big.
Okay. So the higher mass black holes emit...
Much.
Okay.
Many, many orders of magnitude, we say in the jargon, higher than the luminosity of a standard black hole.
So we see some supermassive black holes that are smaller than some of the most massive supermassive black holes. So that's a 10 to the 10 is the biggest that I think can form.
Yes, yes.
Why is there a limit? And also, can you explain the range in sizes?
The range in the masses that we see. Well, yeah, so this is a good question. From our model, what we know for sure now is that we can produce a very big black hole. The clouds that we produce that are going to collapse further, they are typically 100 times more massive than the black hole that lives in our galaxy, which is relatively small as a supermassive black hole. But whether they will produce a black hole of a million solar mass over 100 million solar masses, it depends on processes that will happen inside the cloud and which we don't model yet. You can imagine many processes that may change the final mass of the black hole compared to the initial mass of the cloud. For example, you can imagine that at some point in the very center of the cloud, nuclear burning begins, like in a star, essentially. So this would raise the temperature of the inner region of the cloud a lot and would temporarily stop the collapse. And so this might actually produce a black hole that is smaller than the total mass of the cloud. And all these things we still have to understand. So it is in principle possible that starting from the same cloud, depending on the small scale processes that we don't model yet, you might actually get a range of masses of the final black hole. It says something that we have to understand. Plus, once you've made it, the black hole, because will continue to live as the galaxies evolve, it will continue to accrete mass, the mass that will fall at the center from another collision with another galaxy. It may become bigger. So even if you start with a million solar masses, it may become 100 million. For example, you could imagine that the galaxies that have this process of the formation earlier, they might end up producing the bigger black holes by the time we look at them today. And the ones that have it later, they don't have enough time to grow it at a certain stage.
I have a question about the collapse of the clouds. What stops them producing a star rather than a black hole?
So this is, again, something that we still have to really determine in the modeling, because it is still possible that inside the cloud, a portion of it might ignite and, you know, activate nuclear processes. And so you might have a temporary state of a star. But because the cloud is so massive, it's clear that the gravity of the entire cloud will win over any pressure that you can build up at the center. So you might have a temporary star. This is possible. And we cannot exclude it at the moment. But it won't last more, we think, than a million years, which in astrophysical timescales is really nothing compared to the age of the universe.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being on the Jodcast and
coping with all the people opening doors while we're trying to interview
you. Thank you for interviewing me. I hope it was interesting.
It definitely was.
Very much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.